Welcome to When People Lead. I'm Jeff Rolla. What does it actually take to feed a community? Not just in a crisis, but every single day. Today, I'm joined by Carly Otten, Food Program Director at Neighbor Impact in Central Oregon, and Meredith Knopp, President and CEO of the St. Louis Area Food Bank. Two leaders, two very different communities. One truth, hunger can affect anyone, but anyone can affect hunger. Let's get into it.
Meredith, do you want to start?
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Meredith Knopp. I'm the president and CEO of the St. Louis Area Food Bank. I'm thrilled to be a part of this conversation today as we talk about food insecurity and how we as a nation can come together to ensure that we're meeting the unmet needs of far too many families that are struggling to understand where their next healthy and nutritious meal is coming from.
My name is Carly Otten. I'm the Food Program Director at Neighbor Impact. We are located in Redmond, Oregon. Our service area is all of Central Oregon. I'm also excited to be here. I think food insecurity is a topic that affects everyone. I think we've all been touched either as individuals or by loved ones. With aspects of food insecurity. And I think it's very important to keep bringing light to this conversation and this topic as it's ever evolving.
Well, that brings me to my first question, which is in your professional lives, what got you into this business? What brought you to these this effort you're giving us every day? And I'll start with Carly from that.
Okay. Originally, my degree and my career started in hospitality business, and I worked for a couple of 4 and 5 diamond resorts. As I got further into that career, I realized that I was working 60 hours a week to help make rich people more comfortable, and that just wasn't filling my soul. And so I went back to school and got a second degree in health and wellness and nutrition with a focus on families and kids. And when I moved to Central Oregon, I worked for 5 years at a local school district in free and reduced school nutrition meal programs. And I fell in love with feeding people. It was very eye-opening for me to see a snapshot of what food insecurity looks like. Central Oregon, probably its most famous area is Bend. And the tagline there is poverty with a view. So even in an area that has some high concentrations of wealth, we still have high rates of food insecurity through our entire region. And then I realized I wanted to do this work on a larger scope, and our regional food bank had a position opened. I applied, and fast forward 10 plus years later, and here I am still doing the work in a very different environment and culture than when I first started. I also sit on the board of Oregon Food Bank and the executive committee for the entire network of Oregon food banks. So this work is really ingrained in who I am.
And Meredith, you followed a similar track or something completely different?
Completely different. I was born and raised just outside Detroit, Michigan. My first interactions with food insecurity, I think I was about 4 or 5, when we would go to volunteer at St. Francis Soup Kitchen. And so at a very formidable age, seeing, you know, my neighbors come and get warm meals and seeing children my age, not knowing where their next meal was coming from, when I was very fortunate to know that when I would go home, I could open the refrigerator or open the pantry, and there was something there. And so it was very interesting to me. I remember In my younger years, I wasn't able to serve food, but I could call bingo, right? Because I could use numbers. But so I just remember the joy that people had and just the hope. Fast forward, after I graduated college, I actually spent my first 8 years in the United States Army. So I deployed all over the world, was able to see and experience and help people across the globe that were experiencing real suffering. My first deployment was in 1996 to Bosnia, right after the elections there, and just the devastation that had happened after the war. And seeing so many families just ripped apart and didn't have basic necessities. They didn't have food, running water, electricity. And just all of these things were things that would lead up to where I am now. I remember after I left the military, I spent about 5 years in the for-profit sector. And, you know, similar to Carly, like, it was okay. It was good, but it didn't fill my bucket. And my sense of purpose was wildly out of whack. And so I've been in the nonprofit sector since 2007 and have been serving here and have the privilege of serving as the president and CEO of the St. Louis Area Food Bank since 2018. You know, we serve 26 counties, both in St. Louis and the Missouri area and Illinois. So two very, very different landscapes. In that 8 years, we've experienced two floods, a tornado, a global pandemic, two government shutdowns, and I'm sure I'm missing something. So again, the landscape has changed and consistently evolving. And so our ability to really meet the ever-changing needs of our neighbors and meet them where they are. You know, we talk about here the right food to the right people at the right place at the right time. And that looks differently. It looks like culturally appropriate foods. It looks like medically tailored food boxes. It looks like responding to a tornado that ravaged St. Louis last May. And so people find themselves in need of food assistance for a myriad of different reasons. Sometimes it's a car accident, a lost job, a medical situation. But whatever and however they come to the St. Louis Area Food Bank or our network of almost 600 partners across our 26 counties, we are there because they need us to be on our game every day that ends in Y.
Well, you're both part of a national food network. For feeding people. Feeding America is part of that. What are the things in that are the things in that network that are working well? And what are the things in that network that could use some consistency or improvement? And why? I guess that's the other part. We'll get into the why a little later, but let's talk about the network itself and how it manages to bring the food that you need to distribute to the people that need it.
Sure, I think it's a wonderful network, right? Feeding America has 198 food banks across our great nation of all sizes. But the opportunity there is that you have a food bank that covers every county across the nation. That's the good news. The unfortunate flip side of that coin is that there is a food bank that is needed in every county in the United States. And so it is a great opportunity for us to learn from our partners across the country, what is working, what are they doing programmatically, sharing resources, sharing ideas around food sourcing, around programming, around data management, around fundraising, all of these things, because, you know, food banking and helping people that are food insecure is not a competitive sport. Right. And so it's a wonderful way to collaborate. Here, our food bank, like I said, we sit across two states. So we are also parts of Feeding Missouri and Feeding Illinois. I get to sit on both of those boards and talk about and collaborate with other people in food banking, if that's a word, or food bankers, and talk about how they are addressing the unique needs of their neighbors. And that looks differently in St. Louis than it does in Bend, Oregon. Right? And that's okay. And that's how we're stronger and better together as a network, because we're able to share lessons learned, networking, resources, training opportunities for younger managers and people who are just starting off their careers, because no one has got this figured out. If they did, we wouldn't be having these conversations.
Well, we'll get to that point where we don't have to do this anymore. That would be nice. Carly, how does the network work for you, especially from your position on the Oregon Food Bank?
Yeah, so our we are actually considered an affiliate food bank of Feeding America. So Oregon Food Bank, which is based out of Portland, is our Feeding America partner distribution organization. So we have an extra layer that is between us and Feeding America. And then we have 57 partner agencies in a three county area and service the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs as well. So our service area ends up being about the size of New Jersey. So it's so unique. I totally agree that with Meredith that it looks very different across the country. And yet I think what's really important is that we all have very similar roots in food banking and beliefs and systems, especially across client confidentiality, civil rights, food safety. So it's really rooted in that client experience that folks are able to come, hopefully, with to these vetted partners that will welcome them with open arms, with little to no judgment, hopefully, and are really there to feed people. And oftentimes there are other resources to be shared and community to be shared. And I think that's what makes it so special is that while we all may operate very differently or lean into different programs differently across the country, at the end of the day, we're all rooted in the mission of ending hunger and feeding our neighbors.
Well, and you brought up something that I swear you guys are reading my script, but you brought up something that is important from my perspective. Full disclosure, I spent some time managing a small food pantry in Central Oregon, and that's how I came to meet Carly. I grew up in St. Louis, and one of my high school buddies used to run the St. Louis Food Bank, and that's how I was able to access Meredith. So, but how much of your work depends on the kindness of strangers, on that network of local people who just show up sometimes and provide financial help, provide food, provide labor? You know, that time you spent, Meredith, calling bingo. I mean, bingo has fed a lot of people. I know that. But can you put a quantity on that from your perspective, Meredith?
I can. So, you know, here in the St. Louis bi-state region, you know, our work is predicated on our volunteers. Right. You know, we have, you know, over 70,000 volunteer hours annually. I mean, we have thousands and thousands of men, women and children ages 5 to 95 who are consistently showing up. You know, we never had to shut our doors during the global pandemic. You know, it was COVID-19 because people wanted to help whenever we've had a situation, be it a tornado, a flood, a government shutdown, disruption in SNAP benefits. People are showing up. Whether it's food drives, whether it's financial support, whether it's volunteerism, whether it's advocacy, right? All of these things are critical to our mission and our ability to make sure that we are sourcing and providing healthy and nutritious foods to our neighbors, right? It's our grocery partners who, instead of throwing beautiful, perfectly edible produce and other foods away, are donating it to the St. Louis Area Food Bank and to our pantry partners through our grocery rescue program. It's our foundations, it's our corporate partners who are rolling up their sleeves to do this work with us. It's our partners who are out there on the front lines every day feeding our neighbors and getting us that data and getting us that feedback that gives us trends and says, hey, we need more of this type of food and less of this type of food. So it's all of us coming together. We always say that hunger can affect anyone, but anyone can affect hunger. And that is the call to action here at the St. Louis Area Food Bank.
Carly, I was always surprised in Central Oregon how people would just show up. sometimes, you know, before you knew you needed it, they would show up. What is it about that part of your work that that you find either astonishing or just part of your day-to-day operation?
I think, and you're right, and nothing has been more on the front line than this recent SNAP crisis here. For our Oregonians who went 10 days without SNAP benefits. And it was amazing, the amount of people that showed up, called, donated through our online food drive, came by with food, wanted to volunteer. We have a mobile pantry. We have home delivery. Our volunteer shifts were filled up 6 weeks out in that, because we had some federal food cuts. We were expecting to be down about 400,000 pounds of food. We do about 4 million a year. And the community brought in just in a 3 to 4 week time, 200,000 pounds of food to help us fill that deficit. And I think it's because food, I think for most people, food is a basic human right. And no one wants to see their neighbors go hungry. No one wants to see a mom skip a meal. No one wants to see a kid not bring a lunch to school or not be able to be served at school. And it was, you know, because we've just recently had this crisis, it's on the forefront of our minds. It was a beautiful, beautiful display in a terrible situation of what our humanitarianism looks like right now. And while there are some really tough times, the community does want to support one another. And food feels special. Food brings people together. Food is a connector. And I think it not only makes our clients be able to fill up their grocery bags, but I do think for our volunteers, it does bring them a sense of purpose, a sense of community support. And I think people really want to provide that. They just oftentimes just need to know what that looks like. You know, what kind of food, where to show up, how to volunteer. A lot of times they're there, they're willing. They just need to be told where, when, and why, and how.
That's great. Let's go from the feel-good, purpose-filled mission of our volunteers to the myths around food insecurity. I've been told by people who eat regular that the more free food you make available, you're just going to find more hungry people willing to take it. That, you know, most people in food lines are lazy, they're able-bodied, they should just get a job. They're getting free food so they can spend more money on booze and drugs. Those types of myths that are out there in the community that give people the excuse to ignore the problems that we face. How do you deal with some of those myths, Meredith?
Well, first of all, I address them head on. You know, anyone who is going to say things like that, I challenge them. I say, come out here with me. Come out here with a mobile distribution. Come to our food pantry. Come to our food on the move. I actually had a volunteer once who was there and who said, you know, look at that car right there. That's a nicer car than mine is. Why are they in line for food? I said, let's go ask. I remember they looked at me like, wait, what? I'm like, if you have a problem, if you have a concern, let's go ask. So I remember walking this volunteer up to this car and they were completely, you know, just mortified that I was doing this. I'm like, let's go. And long story short, it turns out that we, you know, tapped on the window and I just, thank you so much for coming out here today. You know, really grateful that you came to us. You know, can you tell us more about what brings you here today? And she was very quickly to say, actually, it's not for me. I'm here to pick up for four of my homebound neighbors Two of them were my former elementary school teachers. One of them is a family friend, and one of them is a neighbor that just broke their leg and couldn't make it here today. And I remember just kind of looking at the side of my eye at this volunteer and watching the blood drain from their face. And I said, look, I said, everybody has a story that you know nothing about. And so before we judge, let's ask the questions, right? I'm pretty sure that if you're in line at 4 a.m. for a food distribution that doesn't start until 10, that you're in need and you'd rather be doing anything else than sitting in that car with your screaming children or with your parents or grandparents or the dogs waiting in line for food. So no, we love dispelling and myth busting here at the St. Louis Area Food Bank, because I can tell you from my experience over 8 years, the gratitude, the hugs, the tears, the God bless yous are
Yeah, I love that story because that is exactly true. And sometimes I like to lead with, about 36% of the people we serve are children. And that usually makes people go, oh, because nobody wants to hear that a child is going hungry, do children have bootstraps to pull themselves up with, because you hear that one all the time. And then about 15% of who we serve are seniors who are on fixed income. And, oh, wait, seniors, we really want to feed our seniors. So then all of a sudden it becomes, wait, a lot of people that are working with what they've got or have no control over their situation are needing food. And so I like to lead with that. And then I will say, you know, to the answer your question about, well, if there's more food, then more people are going to come out. Okay, well, good. Maybe they feel comfortable coming. You know, when people don't come out to lines, is it because they're feeling stigmatized? Is it because they don't have access to the right pantry or the right meal site at the right time? So when I hear that there's more food people coming, and I agree with Meredith, people are coming because they need food. They wouldn't come if they didn't. And it's not just something to take advantage of. And the last point I'll make is there's been a big shift in the last decade, maybe two, to move to shopping style pantries. So our network here in Central Oregon of our 57 partner agencies, they're shopping style. We know statistically when pantries and food partners offer choice for folks, people take less than what they would take if you made decisions for them, pre-boxed their food and handed it to them. And we know about 25% of that pre-packed box without any sort of choice is either discarded or not eaten by the family. And so we know when there's more food and people can make those choices, they take what they need. So those are some of the myths I like to dispel as well, is that it's not a system that's out there being taken advantage of. If people need food, we're going to feed them.
Yes, I've found that. Also, if when someone, you know, gets to the point where they need to go to a food bank or a food pantry, they're not doing it because they're on a lark and looking for a way to get something for free. They're mostly there because they're desperate. And what we find is that when they do come in, first timers are always given a little bit more extra care and a little bit more welcome about the pantry itself and saying, we're so glad you came in. Don't hesitate to come back. We need you to come and help yourself get better and get through this situation. And that to me is right there, it just dispels all the myths that people come up with, because when you see the reluctance of people to come to a food pantry, and they get to a point where, by God, I've got to do something to, you know, to feed my kids or whatever. It gives you a much clearer picture of where the need really is, and where our abilities to meet that need need to go in that situation. So, and with that, one of the things I, you know, because I've been in a rural area for 40 years, I grew up in St. Louis, but how do we get closer to the land? And I'm sure because, you know, the Illinois areas that you serve are very rural in their nature, as well as some of the counties around St. Louis as well. And how do we get more connection from the people who are actually making the food to connect to your organization? I mean, do the farmers come in and drop off a ton of potatoes sometimes, or what? How does that work?
Well, they're usually not dropping it off because they're working their farms.
Yeah.
But we do. So we have great programs, our Farm to Food Bank program, where we work with our local farmers and growers, where we are able to either have donations, have gleaning, where we can have our volunteers go out to the farms and pick, or we're purchasing, right? An economic benefit to our farmers. And so it's a full circle moment when we can get that wonderful fresh produce or proteins or dairy right here in the bi-state region and get it back to the families who need it. We actually commemorated 50 years this past summer, excuse me, and we loved that we were able to bring in our local farmers and growers to some of our large-scale distributions. And so they were able to actually donate you know, the items that they were growing on the farm and then hand it out to families that needed it. And so whether it was a drive-through, whether it was one of our pantries, also on the choice model, as Carly said, our food on the move, our mobile grocery stores on wheels that, you know, our ADA compliant people can go through and pick what they want. But seeing not only the joy from our neighbors, but the joy from our farmers and growers and producers that people were able to enjoy literally the fruits of their labor in many cases and see that was really a full circle moment. And we have so many wonderful partners right here in the bi-state region that are growing and producing food for us, whether it's, you know, during those warmer months, because right now, let's be honest, in February, it's a little chilly, but we have a lot of greenhouses, we have a lot of hydroponics and people that are innovating to provide healthy and nutritious foods 24/7 to our neighbors in need. So they are an integral part of our food supply system and our food sourcing system.
Carly, you have many instances like this. Can you elaborate on them?
Yeah, very, very similar to Meredith. We work really closely with our local growers and producers. We're a lot smaller area, and we're a high desert area, so we have to rely, which makes it very difficult to grow year round. We joke that we grow cows really well here, but the state of Oregon is on the west side of the Cascade Range, is very plentiful with produce. We looked at our 2025 numbers, the amount, our percentage that we resource and distribute produce is a little over 40%. So we lean really heavily into produce here. Very lucky to have a three-state co-op with Washington, Oregon, California, and sometimes Idaho, especially for potatoes, that share those resources. So when Oregon is in over an abundance with onions and potatoes, we'll share with the state of California through that food banking kind of co-op network in large amounts and volumes that can feed the network. And then locally, very similar. We have glean teams We work with another nonprofit called High Desert Food and Farm Alliance. They have their food access. They work with farmers to connect farmers to local folks. So when those farmers contact, it's called HGFFA, they have a glean team that goes out and picks the rows of the produce that they are bumper or that could just be normally tilled under and bring it into our food bank. We also were very lucky that we had a federal contract with a local farmer. Unfortunately, that program has been canceled, but for 3 years, we had a federal contract with a local farmer that grew specifically for us. And that was through a USDA model. And then we do have some food purchasing dollars that came in through a lot of the SNAP crisis and and through the cuts to our TFAT program. And so we prioritize produce. Your dollar can at a food bank can go a lot farther buying fresh produce than it can a lot of your shelf stable items. So, you know, if we're able to source potatoes at 70 cents a pound versus, canned soups for $2 a pound, there are many reasons we lean into that. And so we try to work with those local growers, farmers, and producers to bring that healthy, highly desired, nutritious food into our systems.
Can you define TFAP for us?
Yes. It is the Emergency Food Assistance Program. It is under the USDA umbrella. It is a federal, formerly known as commodities, or some folks know as commodity food. And that was a program that had started during the Depression to help feed folks and to balance the agricultural market. It was originally called the Temporary Emergency Food Assistance Program, but it didn't go anywhere. It stayed put because hunger is still here. And so now it is the Emergency Food Assistance Program.
The term supplemental nutrition has always bothered me in the SNAP program, because it takes a lot of the humanity out of the process. Instead of feeding children or helping those in need, we're providing supplemental nutrition, which is a dry, empty term that people can't really connect with. And so what I'd like to do is look at some ways where we can affect the human component of what Feeding America does and make it more alive for those out there who can help make this system operate better. I'm trying to ask you for conceptual understanding of how we can make the process better, but what ideas do you have about the process now that could be improved? I'll start with you, Meredith.
Well, I think it's important that, what I always try to tell people is, come into the food bank, volunteer here, go out into community, work alongside our pantry partners, or volunteer with one of our programs. See the faces, hear the stories for yourself. I don't see cans and boxes, I see faces, right? With our school markets programs, these are beautiful pantries inside schools, in school colors, run by kiddos. And they're designed to help students who would show up in the morning and go right to the nurse's office because they were sick. They weren't sick. They had headaches and stomach aches because they hadn't eaten since the school lunch they had the day before. And so there are very dignified ways to quantify, but more importantly, qualify what the opportunity is when we talk about food insecurity. And so that's just one example of a program that we run here across the bi-state region, where it dispels the stigma of needing to ask for help. It's not, oh, did you see Meredith at the school pantry, at the school market? It's, you know, hey, Meredith, you want to go to the market? And so the kids can go there and they can get food in the morning. Their families can shop there at no cost to them and get the food items that they need to make meals and to take care of their families. Because we've all been at that point where, you know, maybe we've missed a meal, we've skipped a meal, or we didn't have the ability to have a meal that day, right? And it has an effect on you, right? The stomach aches, the headaches, the hangry, right? It's all there and it's very real. And especially for our kiddos and our seniors, but for anyone, I mean, food, and Carly said it very aptly at the beginning, food is the great uniter. It's the one thing that we all need. Now, what we eat, we can have that conversation on another episode, but you know, we all need food not only to thrive, but to survive. But when you also talk about big events, whether it's birthdays or anniversaries or graduations or Super Bowls, right? Food is the great uniter. It brings people together from diverse backgrounds and perspectives. You know, potlucks, I mean, it's there. Food is a uniter. So that is a wonderful opportunity that we all have to bring people together, to break bread together, to share a meal, and to show that humanity and that compassion with something that is a basic human right.
Well, food is also a peacemaker. And it's really hard to argue with someone after you've had dinner with them. and that's a general human component of things. But how does food fit into the overall complex of dealing with poverty in general? What role does it play, and how can it play a better role? Carly?
Well, I think, you know, I think this is a big question, Jeff.
That's why I gave it to you.
I know, I appreciate you. We talk in our team, our small and mighty team, but food is often, I think, one of the first indicators of what's happening in the economy. Not only do we see it with just outside of food banking in our ag markets, but then we start to slowly see trends in food pantries because folks will usually need to balance their budgets somehow and make choices on what they need to pay that month. I think the statistic I saw recently were nearly 60% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. So when there is a unexpected bill, medical emergency, car repair, etc., folks are going to say, What has to get paid? Well, we want to pay the mortgage or the lease. We want to keep the lights and the electricity and the utilities on. We've got to pay for gas to get to the job because guess what? Most people work that come to food pantries. And so then we see an uptick in food because that we are here. We are a safety net program. And frankly, food bankers always show up. Even when SNAP is disrupted, guess who still shows up to serve food? Food bankers. Yeah. And as much as I love this work that we all do or have done, our SNAP program is by far the most effective anti-hunger program. And so when we're talking about the largest piece of the puzzle, to that is the program that definitely needs to be supported. And food banking will come in, but we aren't as effective as SNAP. We are a drop in the bucket. We are probably an entry point and keeping folks housed, keeping their lights on, building, being there for a sense of community when someone is in a crisis situation. So there's so many reasons that food banking is important. And we've been feeding people through a food banking type system since the beginning of time. So it's not going anywhere. But in the overall picture of things, as the cost of living across this country just goes up and grocery store prices go up, we are seeing that front line of food. And you can't have a healthy country if you aren't feeding people appropriate amounts and types of nutritious foods. Those root causes of hunger and advocating for those policies that keep people, Americans, healthy, fed, housed, and safe.
Meredith, she didn't leave you much to add.
No, and that's the great blessing and opportunity of being in food banking is we understand things, the stream of consciousness. We can complete each other's sentences. Yeah. But I think the other piece of SNAP that is important to recognize, and I realize that we had to do a better job educating when we went through our most recent SNAP crisis, is that not everyone understood the economic benefit that SNAP provides to the grocery stores. Right? You talked earlier, Jeff, about people that might have a belief, albeit errant, about who is receiving food or who is receiving SNAP. But what people didn't understand is that in many of our communities, many of them rural, when there is one grocery store and you have grocery stores receiving a percentage, and many of them a great percentage of their revenue from people using SNAP benefits, the trickle-down effect was what many people don't talk about. Is that if all of a sudden my grocery store receives X amount of, my monthly income from people using SNAP benefits and that's gone, guess what? That affects the grocery store. And now that grocer will have to be faced with laying off people. And when you lay off more people, what does that do? Right? And so there's this, it's a much bigger system than many people understand. They stop at the conversation around who's getting SNAP or what they're buying with their SNAP benefits. And they don't understand the totality of the ecosystem. So that is just one thing I want to throw in there for whoever is watching this, that, the conversation needs to go to that next level.
And that's one of the concepts that I think we need to understand about when people start talking about the welfare state. That quote, assistance that people get is actually economic assistance. And that economic assistance creates an economy. And that economy drives the larger economy that we have and makes it more successful. Because when you have more people who are able to have enough food so that they can make the car payment or buy the gas or get to their job and make more money and then send their kids to school and they can get a job and they can make more money, then you're creating a system that actually improves itself by providing that economic assistance at the lower end to raise people up. And I think that's one of the biggest, we have no trouble bailing out car companies, but or banks, but the fact that we provide some minimal help to people to help them do better is actually an economic driver, is actually a way to boost our overall GDP and economy. And it makes more sense to do that because there are so many more people willing to leverage that into economic prosperity than someone working for, a hedge fund, to say this, for an example. Anyway, soapbox time is over. what is the thing that you're in a profession that generally is pushing that rock up the hill all day long, and then going home and then coming back and finding that it's rolled back down. So then you push the rock up the hill again, and then you rinse and repeat. How do you avoid the pitfalls of the never-ending part of your job? And how can you feel that sometimes you are making a difference in that process?
I think for me, when I...
Maybe I'm crazy.
I go and work a mobile pantry when I need those reminders, because you're not wrong. Right now we're serving more people than we ever have in the 10 years that I've been here with less food. And it's just not a wonderful story to tell. And we know that in our area, folks we're not shutting doors, but we do know folks are walking away with less food. And so when I need that space, I will go out and work a mobile pantry. And as Meredith said, see the smiling faces. People are so grateful. And we might not be able to do everything, but we're doing something. And it is a reminder that, you know, any bit of help with this really nutritious quality food, folks are just really grateful for. And so it's my reminder to connect with our neighbors, to connect with our community, and say, while we aren't right now in an ideal situation, that we are trying to at least be part of a solution.
Meredith, what keeps you going?
I think it is such a blessing to know that every day what you're doing matters, right? And every day you have an opportunity to make a difference in the life of someone else. And oftentimes I have the privilege of meeting them, but more often I don't, right? It's my 18 drivers that are on the road 5 days a week, making multiple stops, picking up food, dropping off food, working with our partners, right? They are the face of the food bank. It's not mine, thank goodness, right? It's them. And so it's knowing that, yes, every day you come to work knowing you have got to work harder than you did the day before, but knowing that because of the efforts of your organization and, as we talked about, our volunteers, our donors, our partners, no one is doing this work alone. Right. I have not met Carly until today, but I know we'd be fast friends. Mm-hmm. Right. Because what we are doing matters. And it's also recognizing that, you know, one of the things we learned in COVID is, you know, to Carly's point, how many people were just one paycheck away from needing help. And the help is food. Right. And so when you look at it and you ground it in that bare bones, you know, these are things and lessons that I even saw and learned. I mentioned my first deployment to Bosnia, right? Going out there. And when we had been there for already 9 months and finally, you know, we're living on a base at a Connex, which is basically a trailer instead of living out of your vehicle, and had a chow hall. Oh my gosh, we had hot food, right? The world changed. And I remember Christmas taking our leftover food because we didn't want to waste, and taking it out to a village that we were helping rebuild. And it was leftover army chow hall food, right? This was not, you know, 4-star, 5-star Michelin restaurant stuff here, but taking it to this village where the people had literally lost everything and had nothing on Christmas Day, and sharing that meal with them was the great equalizer. It was food, but it was hope. It was hope that their tomorrow was going to be better than their yesterday. And that is our why. It is food and hope. And that has been my hashtag since I got here and will be my hashtag forevermore, because it is so much more than that food. It's letting that mother, that father, that grandfather, that child know that someone cares about them and that we see you and that we're going to be here for as long or as short as you need us to be, because we want you to live your best possible life whatever and however that turns out to be.
Well, thank you for the hope that you give, both of you. Thank you for the care that you give, both of you. Thank you for the time and effort and frustration that you let go of to keep going every day to feed America. I am so grateful for you and all of the other people who work in this network of feeding people. And we hope to be able to tell your stories and shout it out to the world and get you a little more help and a little more hope tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, hang on.
Thank you to Carly Otten at Neighbor Impact and Meredith Knopp at the St. Louis Area Food Bank. If you want to support their work, visit neighborimpact.org and selfwoodbank.org. Both links are in the show notes. If you know a community leader making a difference, quietly showing up every day, I want to tell their story. Visit whenpeoplelead.com. Subscribe to When People Lead wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jeff Rolla. Keep leading.